Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we ask the question, is a soundbar the home theater solution that you've been looking for? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. Normally on the Hardware Asylum podcast, we talk about things that happened at hardwareasylum.com. Check out the site if you are listening to us right now. But I've noticed that we've been talking a lot about audio lately.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Audio, I think, is a strong extension to PC enthusiasts, right?
Oh, yeah. Of course, modern computers are using more USB headphones and stuff like that. But when you get into the raw speakers, you have a little bit more control over the way sound is, where you place your speakers, the volume of your speakers, and how much you can annoy your neighbors.
Well, I think that the modern PC has a multiple role aspect. It's not just a work PC or a gaming PC, but for a lot of folks, this is their entertainment system. So it's doing music. For some folks, it's their source of movies and other entertainment. So we're not just playing games. We're not just overclocking and working, right? Audio is important in that mode too.
Yes, and I want to reference a recent review that we did on Hardware Asylum, which was the Creative Soundblaster GS3 Compact RGB Gaming Soundbar.
Oh yeah.
Which is a mouthful in itself, but it's a very compact soundbar, and it's one that you reviewed, and I believe it was actually pretty good.
I think this is a great one to name check and to put a link down in the bottom, because this is, in my opinion, I think the first entry-level opportunity to talk about a soundbar as a viable solution for your computer, your PC, that type of thing. Because we've all gone through this, right? Mm-hmm. You feel like you need speakers. So what do? You buy yourself a 2.1 system. For most of us, it's an afterthought because we spent our budget on video cards, or we spent our budget on something that we thought was important. And then, oh yeah, we need speakers. Now, of course, Dennis, for some years, that would be blasphemy, right? To talk about a soundbar as a solution for any kind of home theater system over a good pair of separates and a receiver.
Oh, yeah.
Or a good sound card, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the 6x9 coaxials that replace a separate system in your car audio and
right, system. Right, a generalist instead of a master. But, you know, the funny thing is that the genesis for this, in my mind, comes some years ago, right? Way back, remember CES 2018?
Oh yeah, I do. That was a fun time.
So we went to CES, and guys, mm-hmm. we'll link to the article here, and we had the opportunity to sit with sound engineers from Creative, mm-hmm. and folks will know Creative. We love Creative, and they've got just a long history of PC computer genius.
Oh yeah.
But what we did, and I'm going to set the stage a little bit. You can go back and read the article, and I know you were there, so bear with me for a second. They took us into a room with a beautiful home theater setup, just your traditional, I don't know what it was, a 7.2, 11.4, doesn't matter, big old speakers and a nice TV, and they played some music for us.
Yeah.
And it sounded amazing, even with just four curtain walls. Mm-hmm. And then, if you recall, what did they do next? They did two pieces of audio wizardry. Number one, they had us close our eyes, and they put headphones in, and they used Super X-Fi to simulate that system.
Yeah, and it was recreated exactly in terms of positioning, audio levels, everything.
So we said, oh my gosh, this XFI stuff is amazing, and Creative Labs are geniuses. And then they took it one step further. Mm-hmm. They turned all that off and they fired up a sound bar.
Yes.
Just in front. No subwoofers, no speakers behind, nothing.
Yeah, it was the XFI Sonic Carrier. And this thing was massive in terms of a sound bar. Uh-huh. It had, lots of speakers.
And they showed us that you can trick your brain into believing that you have a full audiophile grade system coming out of a soundbar. Now, obviously not a cheap soundbar.
No. It was something like $3,000 or something.
But this opened my eyes to the fact that maybe all that separate snobbery is not always the solution. Sometimes a soundbar might work.
To this point, we have a lot of technology built into this soundbar, which is why it works so well.
Oh, yeah. And you can't buy this anymore. They couldn't sell it because it cost too much to make. And I know they made a handful of them. And believe me, I regularly find myself slow trolling eBay and the like, hoping somebody out there is getting rid of one because they were expensive. They took a loss. It was kind of the Lexus supercar of sound systems, right? Mm-hmm. Every car they sold was at a loss.
Oh, ouch.
flash forward today, where suddenly Creative has a whole range of sound bars at a whole range of prices.
Well, of course. And obviously we mentioned the GS3 already as the compact RGB gaming solution, but we've reviewed several of them in the past as well.
So somehow my house has become a den of sound bars.
Oh, I wonder how that happened.
And I want to thank Creative for that because they just keep getting better and better. For example, the most recent sound bar that I would consider a home theater substitute that we reviewed mm-hmm. was the Sound Blaster Katana version 2.
Yep.
That's a multi-channel, comes with a subwoofer, which in my opinion is where you first make that jump into a possible solution for your home theater system.
Yeah, you got to have something that hits you with a little boom.
So there are now 3 Katanas on the market. There's a newer one even than this. And if you have a smaller room or an apartment, for example, you should definitely be looking at one of these because you just don't have the room for a full-size receiver that does Dolby Atmos and 5.1. You don't have room for a big subwoofer. You probably don't have the money to put 11 speakers on your walls, right?
Yeah. It kind of sounds like you have some experience in this.
Been there, done that.
Yep.
So maybe let's stop and talk about that a little bit because you have a system that's similar to mine.
Kinda, yeah.
So what I'm working with at home is a Denon system that does 11.2.
Yeah, that's just at the receiver level.
At the receiver level. I had separate monoblock amps.
Ooh, separate amps.
For each of the channels. Mm-hmm. Marantz blocks. They're older, right?
But, you know, they're name brand.
And I had a full setup of Paradigm Titans. So this is at the old house.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I recently moved, long story short, too late, into a house where the home theater room only has 3 walls.
Yeah, that's the typical, you know,
open floor plan.
Yeah.
So we set the system up, and I'm trying to replicate at home that 11.2 setup with no right wall.
Or no correct wall.
Think about it for a minute. So you've got, all right, set up a center channel, do left and right, do high left and right, do rear left and right, do
Rear center or rear center, rear left or right?
High left and right, but you got no side ones and no desire to cut holes in your ceiling.
Yeah, the problem here is that you can have right and left speakers, but you need to put them on a stand. It's the same problem we had when 5.1 channel surround sound speakers were popular for the computer system.
Exactly. You had to have some sort of weird rig or...
Or some booms that connected from the table behind you.
I remember those weird booms. I don't know if you can still buy those.
I don't think so. But the idea there was that you would be able to suspend the speakers so that you could still use them. But what you really did was just created something for you to bump your head on.
Or you just buy a nice Creative amp like the AU5 and a really great set of headphones. Thank you, Sennheiser.
Yep.
And you're set.
Exactly.
So anyway, I couldn't make it work. So I started looking, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, all right, well, let's throw this Katana out there for a little bit while we're tearing it all apart as kind of a temporary solution. And I did.
Yeah, it's probably a bit underpowered for the size of your room.
But it wasn't terrible.
No.
So I said, well, all right, what is out there? Now, I can't buy a Sonic Carrier anymore, dang it. So
yeah.
I ended up with an odd choice. I ended up with a Samsung to match my TV, a Q-series, a Q990C, soundbar solution. So we'll find a link to this. And of course, this is not a paid promotion, my own personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love it if Samsung would sound to soundbars, and maybe someday it'll happen.
Maybe.
Right? But this is an 11.1.4 channel wireless Dolby Atmos soundbar. And it's not a cheap one.
Yeah, this is the Q990C.
Exactly.
So the third edition, I guess.
So if you're doing the reference out there, there's a newer version called the D. Some small differences between the two, and one of them is the HDMI feed.
The pass-through for the new protocol.
Right, so if that's important to you, be aware. But the Cs are a great price, and they're regularly on sale because they're no longer the new one.
Oh, and so speaking of price, normally we don't mention this because they change so often, but I'm seeing close to $2,000 for the soundbar, but on sale, we're probably, 50% off?
You're going to see 25% off pretty regularly, about $1,500.
Yeah.
Less if you're patient. And I know there's some open boxes and stuff out there. Your mileage may vary. be careful.
Oh, okay. So what does this soundbar solution come with?
So let's talk through it. We've got a front soundbar, and it's large. It's like 30 pounds maybe. You've got a decent sized subwoofer with a port, and it is it's an 8-inch, which was the biggest challenge for me to accept.
Wow.
Because as you know, I've had two subwoofers in the past, an 8-inch Paradyne and a 12-inch Monster Audio Profile.
Oh.
Which both have been replaced. And two rear satellites. And they're tiny. They're a little bigger than what I would consider a Bose speaker, which would normally turn me away a little bit also.
Oh, you're talking about like the size of
the size speaker? Of the speaker. So let's talk about what you're getting for this, because you're getting an awful lot of speakers in not very many locations.
Right. So you got front soundbar, and there's what, 8 speakers in there?
8 speakers, including 2 that are up firing.
Okay, so that's where you can get your Atmos reflections.
Right. And then in the rears are 3 channel. They are side, rear, and rear Atmos.
Right. Because for true Atmos, you need to have a front ceiling and a rear ceiling.
So getting those little guys in the back oriented has been a bit of a challenge because of the way the room is set up.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even tonight we were talking about some slightly different placement that might work better.
Well, but yeah, because some people say, hey, we have to have them on the side of us. And anyone that's ever built a home theater, like me, knows you don't do that because you get blasted.
Well, you got to get a little bit of that front rear feel to it. And again, maybe we're old fashioned and snobby. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, certainly feel free to write us and tell us we're wrong.
Yeah.
But with these, it's a great solution. And everything is wireless. That's, I think, the biggest pro. The subwoofer is wireless. The rears are wireless. And the front is controlled or can control the TV, depending on what brand you have.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, with Samsung, they like to have everything networked. And I want to mention the wireless capability of the speakers, because that was a big discussion point with everybody that made speakers at CES this year. That was kind of the new thing, because we could have wireless technology that was finally fast enough to be able to send audio and not have it out of phase.
Right. Because especially for home theater, right? You cannot have the vocal out of sync, or it just takes you completely out of it.
Exactly.
And we've all experienced this. Even when you're watching some of your streaming services, even your premium streaming services, sometimes you just start to go, is that getting out of sync? Is that just me? Pause play.
Yeah, try to get it to come in.
Yeah, it's frustrating. So anyway, we got this thing set up. It came up like a champ. I didn't even have to push a sync button.
Oh, nice.
Now, I should note that I have a Samsung 4K TV. It's a fairly new one, 75-inch. Q70-something-something, don't quote me on that. So it is designed to sync with that soundbar. So what that means is that if you tell the soundbar it's in charge of the sound, which it does by default, it will also control the 4? I think it's 4 speakers that are built into my TV and use those as front fill.
Ooh, nice.
So you get, I guess, 4 more? Was that 15 points, right?
Well, if you count the first ones as the number of speakers, then yeah, that's a total of 15.
And it's really nice because it actually becomes that sort of front high and front low because they're different elevations.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's really important that you have your center channel positioned correctly, because that is where the primary voice comes from any sort of a movie or even listening to audio.
Mm-hmm.
If you have it above the television, that's where it traditionally needs to be, then you point it down towards you. And what happens is that the audio will cross over the screen and it looks like it's coming from there.
Right.
Now, with the way that Samsung has their speakers placed, plus the sound bar, they can combine those together and actually give you that.
I think for me, that is the strongest part of the solution, is it becomes very clear where the sound is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we tried it both with and without the audio interface booster built into the software, you know, your vocal enhancer, if you will.
Yeah.
We found that it's generally not needed unless you get a movie that really muddles your sound.
Yeah, something like the Lowland films, when he has that audio track in the background, it just makes it impossible to listen to anybody saying anything.
Let me call out the latest Rambo flick.
Oh, yeah, that's another good one.
Which is what we had it turned on for just this week.
Ah.
Go Rambo.
Yeah, you know, it was a good film.
He's a little mumbly at some point. So let me come back to this, because we started with about a $6,000 to $8,000 setup. Mm-hmm. And we moved to arguably one of the most expensive soundbars out there. Challenging to accept mentally as an enthusiast. However, I should tell you guys, as a quick aside, you can buy a much more expensive soundbar out there. It's difficult to do, but I did look at a crazy unit called a Nakamichi Dragon, which features 11.4.6. And if you're out there and you're thinking maybe that Samsung unit doesn't sound like enough, but you're interested in a soundbar, let me tell you, you can blow your budget.
Yeah, so the Nakamichi, obviously Nakamichi is a very, very famous brand. It's going to already command a little bit of a premium.
And if you're not familiar, this is a huge brand overseas, one of the premium brands that are out there.
Yeah. When we look at the soundbar offering, we have rear fills, which are set up exactly like the Samsungs. So right. We have three speakers. So we have the Atmos, and then we have a right and a left. We also have dual subwoofers. I find that dual subwoofers is probably the way that people should go.
Yes. And in fact, I was disappointed that my soundbar didn't have a passive subwoofer out.
Right. Well, in this case, I believe these are probably eights as well. And if you double up your eights, that gives you the bass that you're probably looking for. If you only have a single eight, you kind of have to have it really close to you. Otherwise, it doesn't rumble as well.
I agree completely. And my setup is actually in the corner closest to the primary listening condition for that very reason. Mm-hmm. Gives you the illusion that it's a much larger sub.
Yeah. Now, Nakamichi also has a picture of the soundbar, and we have three sets of speakers. So we have a right, which is comprised of four speakers. We have a center comprised of three speakers. And then we have the left, which is comprised of that same three mid-range plus a tweeter.
Yeah, and I believe we have the same two front firing up Atmos and rear firing up Atmos.
Yeah, so basically we have an amazing soundbar that really mimics that Sonic Carrier from Creative way back in 2018.
It truly does, even to the angle on the sides, although I feel like neither one of them has an angled Atmos front-firing speaker, which I feel like something like even Clips has got figured out.
Yeah.
Right. So you do have a little bit of the challenge there where you don't have that angle where it's coming towards you off of the ceiling. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that you necessarily notice as long as you're running everything in a really good equalized environment.
Right. So speaking of the environment, we have at the place where you installed your soundbar, we have basically three walls. We have the television wall. To the left is a solid wall. Behind you is a wall with lots of glass. Mm-hmm. But you also have some blinds on there, so that's going to soften up the glass, any sort of reflections you get.
Right.
And then to the right of you is completely open, and you can see the kitchen.
Yep, like a lot of them. It's a long, open hallway of open house space. Great for everything, but not great for home theater.
In your opinion, do you find that the soundbar equals the way that you had your separate setup?
Well, that's a difficult question, because we did try a floating speaker in that open space on a stand. I didn't like it. It sounded better feel-wise, but it looked horrible, and I found that it was always like in danger of getting knocked over.
it was in the danger zone, so to speak.
And if you look at a Paradigm Titan, it's not a small speaker.
No, it's big.
It's a much bigger speaker. So hanging there, it was just awful. So I thought about trying to hang something from the ceiling in two spots to simulate a wall. And then again, I'm hacking up my ceiling. I might as well put the Atmos speakers up there.
Right.
And even to do that, you can have them hanging up there, firing down at an angle, 15 to 45 degrees, right? And your ear will sort of pick up a side channel, but you can't balance it out with your regular height speakers on the other wall. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, they're technically too tall. It's too high up.
Yeah.
Because the way that they're supposed to be set up is that you're right and left at the viewing position should be at ear level when you're seated.
Exactly.
And if they're up too high, then it's a remote at that point.
So the other solution was shot down by my wife, no new wall.
Oh, damn. Need a new wall.
I know. Or alternately, we just build a whole new home theater room, shot down.
Yeah, that's kind of expensive these days.
So we're back to the budget solution. So interestingly enough, you have a different setup because you have some different challenges.
Well, yeah. And I also have something that was purpose-built. So I might have mentioned this in an old episode, but the house that I'm living in, which is Ninja Lane Building 1, we're in Building 2, which is the garage, by the way. When I designed it, because I actually went to school for this kind of stuff. I created a TV room, or a, well, a media room, so to speak, which was where, you know, normally you have your hearth, your fireplace, right, and stuff like that. Well, I don't know, fireplaces are so passe. I wanted my television to be my hearth. So I made a media room. And this room is in the shape of an octagon. And I'm going to try to describe it as best as I can. We have an area in front where the television goes, and that's actually where the speakers and everything is placed.
So your center stage.
Center stage.
Right.
And then right behind that is an entryway. So we have an entryway that goes from right to left, so we can walk in front of the television. And that was mostly for egress. But beyond that is where we have the catches set up for seating. And then behind that is also a wall of speakers. So I have a total of 6.1 right now is the way that I have it set up.
Right.
And now my receiver supports Atmos. I could have actually put speakers in the ceiling, but at the time I didn't wire for that, and I'm not going to go up there and cut holes just because it seems to work as it is. Now my speaker setup is I have a Boston Acoustics Center that's sitting above the television. We have a 75-inch Samsung similar to you. And then we have Polk Audio speakers all around. So there's a couple of towers that are right and left for the main soundstage. And then there's some bookshelf ones for the rear fill and the rear center. And the idea here is much like the way you had your Paradigm set up, where we have individual speakers at each one of the listening positions at each one of the channels. And they are positioned in such a way that everything blends together. You wouldn't think that an octagonal room would work well for a home theater situation. And if you ask anybody that says, hey, I'm going to install a home theater for you, they say square's best. But the reason they say that is because theaters that you go to are square.
So
you
can't. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Well, with an octagonal room, I don't have to turn the speakers. The walls have already positioned those for me. And every time that I have tuned a new receiver, unlike your Q990C, where it does active tuning, has some microphones and stuff, you have to place a microphone in your different listening positions, and then you run a sound test through the receiver so that it can tune each one of the speakers. What it does is it changes the volume at each one of the speakers so that everything is equal. So when the sound reaches the listening position, it sounds good. Every time I've done that, everything is zeroed out.
Beautiful.
Which is, I don't know, it's a testament to the way that I designed everything, but it also kind of lets me know that what I have works.
Now, your room, I think, has a different challenge that might be difficult for a soundbar to overcome.
Yes, and that is because I have a very high ceiling.
Very high ceiling. And I'm not sure that the built-in software understands an octagon. I'm not going to lie.
No. It probably just thinks that every room is square. And in your case, everything is wireless, so it can kind of figure out where the speaker is located, and it can kind of tune things from there. But in my case, if I put a soundbar under the television, I don't think it would really work as well. Just because of that. I mean, there's a high ceiling in there. It's also an octagon. And it's just different.
Well, different challenges for different folks. Now, I want to point out that we did some testing just for fun to see how the soundbar would compete. And I did some individual testing against my previous setup and against the Katana. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it might be fun to talk about some of the cool stuff that we tested with for folks out there that have new audio systems they want to show them off.
Oh, right. Okay. So you had Jurassic Park, the very first one.
So this is a fun one. I'm glad you started with that one because way, way back when, you started using the original Jurassic Park to show off my system off a Laserdisc, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was so great back in the day. And to be honest, they were way ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Well, and also Jurassic Park is really coded for 5.1 channel sound. So you basically have your front, rear, center, and sub.
It's really great bass line. You fire up the old T-Rex scene or any of the scenes with Rain, right? You can listen to the fill. It's particularly great if you have one of the new ones that have the 4K transfer with UHD. Now, you're going to get incredible sound. I found that when things are tuned right, it's not unusual for you to have to sort of trick yourself. Like, hey, is it raining outside? Nope, well, still 100 degrees.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and the rain is very subtle because it's something that's going to show up in the rear fill that doesn't normally happen in a lot of other movies because they don't think about that. So it's just it's an atmospheric effect that gives you that immersion factor.
Now, what I really like about that scene also is you're going to get the tremendous different types of bass from the T-Rex. You're going to get a lot of range from the ambient. You're going to get car noises, crush noises, some really great vocal range as they start to get excited.
Yep.
Highlights for me when the fence twangs. It's really great when the T-Rex hollers. And of course, who could not get excited about watching that little cup vibrate the bass starts to come in?
That's true. And the one thing that I like about that scene is that it covers all of the audio ranges. So the entire frequency range. So we have low bass, we have mid bass, mid range, mid high.
Yeah.
And then also the very high end. And what surprised me the most is that I always remember the T-Rex as having kind of a throaty squeal.
Right.
But on your soundbar, it sounded really high-pitched. And then we played it again on my system, and I noticed that there was a little bit deeper notes, but the highs were gone.
Yeah, so a little bit different tuning to the system.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Pros and cons, right? Having set up that bass line with a movie that we're both very familiar with is important because when you fire up something modern, which we did next with the latest Blade Runner movie, the intro scene, mm-hmm. where we have that flight into the system with Dave Bautista's character that ends up with the fight. You've got the ambience of the soundtrack, you've got overhead tracking, you've got a lot of environmental noises from the farm, the house, and then the percussion of the fight, just all in a very short period of time.
Yep. It's very loud, it's very crispy.
Well, Lars, everything that comes from that era is going to have the large trumpet noises, the heavy rumbling bass, mm-hmm. which is a challenge for systems with a single smaller subwoofer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's where you're going to know how big your sub really is.
So I was really impressed with how well that filled out. Mm-hmm. And particularly for me, the big plus was that overhead noise that traveled. So you could hear the overhead, not just the behind, left, and rights, mm-hmm. which is why you want a good Dolby Atmos system.
I brought over Knives Out, which, you know, it's a murder mystery, which is actually it's a great film. You should check it out.
Oh, yes.
But on the Blu-ray disc, there is an Atmos soundbite, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, like an intro, like back when you used to get the THX thing at the beginning, or if you go to Illumination with the Minions, right? Yeah.
So with this Atmos demo, what happens is that it has, you know, a full range of sound, but then it also walks you around the room. So you have these steps and progressions that go all the way around, and it hits every one of the channels, including the Atmos channels. And I wanted to play that one on your soundbar to see if there were really any holes. And unfortunately, yeah, there were, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Well, I was disappointed, but not unexpectedly, because when you don't have a wall, you can't simulate a wall.
No. Nope.
And so the system did a pretty great job of covering that up, but you did have a little bit softer left side, mm-hmm. and then that just tiny bit of missing right side as it worked its way around the room. And it did a pretty good job of tracking.
Well, and I also want to point out that one of the shows that we saw was 5.1, which is Jurassic Park. And we do have some surround sound effects that happened there. And then when we played that Atmos demo, that is where it's going to get into the 10 and 11.1s, 11.2s. The difference between those two tracks is basically the overlay of the audio. So with Atmos, it's a higher definition because it makes the audio more narrow for every speaker that's going to be reproducing. Whereas the older 5.1s, there was a lot more of an overlay. And I want to say that the soundbar represented 5.1 much better than the higher resolution, just because we needed to have a little bit more of reflection that wasn't there.
Well, I think that's the audio trickery that comes with these systems these days, because you can get your fill speakers and your Atmos speakers to help fill in for that missing bit with 5.1 very easily. But when you're trying to do 11.1, it just can't quite make up for that missing section.
So what was the last movie that we saw?
Let's see here. We did Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, yeah. The racing scene at the very end. That was really nice.
Very great. Very great. And what did we finish with? We finished with Rogue One.
Oh, yeah. Rogue One. Now, the nice thing about Rogue One was that it was easy listening, because we weren't looking for big booms. We were looking for the atmosphere.
I can't agree more. In fact, I was sort of surprised, even in the space scenes, how tamed it was. It kept it in a very, I think, safe range where any home theater system should be able to play it. So it really played to the strengths of the soundbar.
Exactly. And the audio was clear. It was positioned correctly. And, you know, when we had fights that were happening behind us, they were actually happening behind us. That was, it was a great a blend of everything.
Spaceships flying by, blasters behind and in front, really terrific. And, you know, Lucas has been doing sound for
years
and just phenomenally. And to see them dial it in was very impressive. But again, I felt like it's hard when you're watching movies, mainstream movies, to get out of that range that's the safe range, if you will, for a system like that. Mm-hmm. And again, another really solid reason to consider a soundbar over separates.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2024. Thanks for listening.